This is a No Surf Music, Burning River Fireside Chat.
With guest, G.S. Harper.
I'm your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. For the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more, point your browser to nosurfmusic.com. This is another edition of No Surf Music's Burning River Fireside Chats. And with me today is Cleveland's own G.S. Harper. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm pretty damn good, because I'm going to get to see you again tonight. And it's been a while, man, because you've been out on tour.
I've been tearing up the interstate.
Yep. Indeed. How long has it been now since you were back home?
I left Cleveland on September 4th.
Okay.
It's now September 28th, so over 3 weeks, almost a month.
Yeah, and that's a pretty long spread for you, because you haven't... been doing too much touring in the last few years, right?
Little bits here and there, but no, nothing this hardcore. And it's this is just the beginning. I'm only in Cleveland till the 1st, and then I'm out again.
All right. But tonight you are at Cleveland's newest venue, the Music Box Supper Club.
Indeed.
And this is my first time here, too. I've been trying to get here as well and haven't really seen it. But what do you think of the place so far?
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. They seem to be doing everything right. The food's really good. The room is beautiful. The sound's nice. The screen room is amazing. It's a really nice venue.
All right. From what I've seen, I agree. So we'll find out tonight when I get the whole experience. But I guess the reason you've been on the road so much is, of course, because you had a new album that came out. What was the official release date? In July 26th. I should know that because it was my birthday.
It was your birthday.
That was the dumbest question I've ever asked in an interview.
I won't tell anybody.
Yeah, it's not like it's being recorded or nothing. So yes, it did come out July 26th, and you played your release show up in the Cleveland area with our friend Alice Wallace opening.
Yes.
And what's the name of the new CD?
16 Winters.
All right. And the reason for that, of course, is because you are not a native Clevelander. You're a Texas transplant, but you've been here for 16 years, and therefore you've endured 16 Cleveland winters. Am I right?
That is exactly right.
All right. And the song... is in some ways a little bit of a retrospective, or not the song, the album, is a little bit of a retrospective on that whole time because it contains songs from that entire period, right?
Yeah, 16 Winters is a collection, really. It's all new recordings, nothing that's, because none of these songs have ever been recorded or released before. But they are songs that I've written over the entire 16-year time period that I've been in Cleveland. Started in 1998 and all the way up to 2014, you know, was the newest song on the record. And, that's it. There were all songs that I'd written at different time periods. I was with different bands and different projects. And for whatever reason, these songs, I love all these songs. They were by no means a collection of leftovers.
Mm-hmm.
These songs are all really important to me. But they just hadn't made it into a recorded format and been released anyway. You know, the previous three records, they just, for whatever reason, they weren't used. And it was time to get them all out there and let them run and play.
Okay. And... for me, your Texas roots in the way that you tell stories combines beautifully with a sort of like Cleveland heartland rock kind of a feel, and you blend those together. And you have some that are more country, more western, and some that are they're more rockin'. But do you think? What do you feel as an immigrant, like your experiences have been in the two different forms of music that you've had experience in now?
Cleveland's been a huge influence on me. It really has. It's a completely different environment, both the landscape and the weather. And the people that are here, Canada's across the lake. You can't really get much further away from Texas, you know, heading north. And still be in the United States. And you can't get any further south than Texas and still be in the United States. You're at polar opposite ends of the spectrum. And the people are very different, the culture's very different, the landscape's very different, the weather's very different. But at the same time, they do really complement each other well. You know, that whole Rust Belt attitude and the love of the loser thing and the urban decay and regeneration at the same time, the city recovering. I mean, I got here when it about hit its lowest point, and I've been watching it slowly recover ever since then. It's kind of like that whole Phoenix rising from the ashes thing that, you know, and the whole industrial rock and roll group, you know, really complements Texas storytelling tradition really, really well. and it's easy to get them to play together if you pay attention to the fact that they're more similar than they are different.
Okay. And originally, well, you left Texas, and then you were in New Mexico for a little while, and out there you met your future wife, correct?
That is true.
And she's a Cleveland native, and that's why you ended up back here.
That is also true.
So when you landed here and you started playing around and doing gigs, what were your first impressions? First, is just the city, and then of the music as it was at the time, the music scene?
The music scene then was not even a fraction of what it is now. Mm-hmm. People, which I don't understand, a lot of people like to think, you know, talk about how much better it was, you know, 20 years ago or whatever. Well, I wasn't here then, but I was here 16 years ago, and I would much rather play music and work musically in the city that is Cleveland today.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many more venues and so many more people into live music. It's when I first got here, it was I don't want to say it was dismal, because there was work. I've never been without work the whole time I've been here. But it wasn't the same thing. You know, for singer-songwriters, there were pretty much only the coffee shops.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And, you know, you couldn't make any money, and it was crazy. Now there's all kinds of places. There's places like the Music Box here. There's the Beachland. There's the Happy Dog.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many of these great venues that are really into the whole singer-songwriter thing and into the roots music thing. Roots music didn't exist in Cleveland, as far as I knew, when I moved here. I was here for a couple of years, and I had looked around and couldn't find anything country or roots-related or hunk. I mean, there was a couple of top 40 country bands,
right?
But nothing more rootsy. And then I was approached by a guy named David Bowling, who's in a band called Hay Shaker Jones. He said they were a traditional country band, and they were looking for a guitar player. So I went and checked them out, and I joined immediately when they asked me to, because that was the only outlet I could find in the whole area to play that kind of music. You know, not only good original honky-tonk music, but also cover Merle Haggard and George Jones and Willie Nelson. You know, nobody around here was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, the scene has really expanded and grown. And there's so many great roots acts here now and artists, and it just kept getting more and more. It's a great scene. It's a great place to be making music right now.
I absolutely agree. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I like living and working here, or at least covering music so much, you know, compared to other places. You know, it's still small enough that you can pretty much get to know everybody and figure out what's going on. It's not like giant like Chicago or New York, but at the same time, like, there's a lot of vitality and it's a lot of fun.
I still think it's in its infant stage.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to grow a lot more. And as it does, as all things do, like Austin or Nashville, you know, it's going to get both worse and better for the musicians, and much better for the tourists and the crowds and stuff. But I think we're witnessing one of the coolest roots music births in the country in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's in its infancy, but I'm really interested in seeing where it goes, and I'm glad I got to be part of it.
Absolutely. So one part that you did play in that, in not quite the earliest of days, but in your earlier days, was you were a member of the house band for the Town Friar, which is kind of legendary now in Cleveland. Is one of those places that had to close down, but it really was the center of that kind of music for a while in Cleveland, right?
It really was, in my mind. You know, the Beachland has always supported and booked roots acts and been big champions of the movement.
Mm-hmm.
But they book mostly, you know, regional and national stuff, and while they're very supportive of locals, there's just not as much room for that there. The Town Friar was a small room in a local neighborhood, and really what started that whole thing, I really feel that the Town Friar was responsible for everything that's happening in the roots music scene in Cleveland today. I think that's where it all really started and exploded from. And it started before I was playing there in the house band. My friend Clint Holly, who was also in Hay Shaker Jones, had been approached by Susie, or had approached her, I forget which way it went, about having a kind of a loose, non-kind of jam session on Sunday afternoons. And it grew into Sunday afternoon, to Sunday evening, to Sunday night, to sometimes we were there till Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really loose and just really casual, but it was all roots related. It was all country or roots related. You know, they didn't I guess you could call blues music roots, but it wasn't, you know, all the other jams in town were all blues jams or rock jams.
Right.
And when Clint started that one, it was just a bunch of people getting together to play country music and roots music and singer-songwriter music that all had that Americana vibe to it or that classic country vibe to it. And that wasn't happening anywhere else. And players and songwriters and singers came out of the woodwork. People came out of retirement. People who said, I didn't think I could ever do this in Cleveland or could never do it again,
mm-hmm.
you know, all of a sudden they were there. There were so many bands, some of which are still part of the scene, that were formed out of that jam that happened on Sundays. And I met Susie when I was playing those with Clint, and a couple of weeks later she called me and said she had had a blues band that was playing there every Friday night. And the guitar player had to have some kind of surgery or something, and they couldn't make it. And she called me and said, I called Clint, and his band can't do it. Do you have a band that can come and play on this Friday night? And so I called my guys, Billy Crompton and Andrew Zeger, the centers. I called them and said, hey, can you guys play on Friday night? And they said, yeah. So we went down and played for Susie, and for the entire first set of the night, I couldn't tell if she loved us or hated us. She was standing at the back of the room up against the food cooler in the kitchen, and she was just kind of staring at me with this kind of half look on her face that was kind of a smile and kind of a, what the hell are you doing? You know? I couldn't really tell what she thought, and I thought, well, you know, we're either going to get fired or she'll tell us to turn down. I don't know what's going to happen. So at the first set break, I walked back to her and I said, hey, is everything okay? Because I didn't really know her that well then. I said, is everything okay? Do we sound all right? Are you happy? And she just looked at me and she said, I think you guys need to be my new Friday night band and play here every Friday. And I turned around and asked Billy and Andrew, and they said, yeah, they wanted to do it. So for the next 5 years, I was at the Town Friar every Friday night. When the centers split up, we started an acoustic project, G.S. Harper and the Lonesome Tomatoes, and we did it after that. And yeah, it was about 5 years that we did that every Friday.
All right. And I guess just give people an idea. Who were some of the other people that were playing around at that time at the Friar?
Oh, at the Friar back then. I'm pretty sure that was the lion's share where the Jack Fords were formed. Bobby Lutina, Brent mm-hmm. Kirby, Greg Campoletti, and I forget who I think Pat Christopher was the original bass player. He just passed away recently.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Jack Fords came out of there. Brent Kirby got a whole lot of traction in that place. Robert Cornelius, Bobby Lamphere was a big one that was there. He's since moved to Nashville and is doing well down there.
Okay.
One of my favorite songwriters from Cleveland. He used to have a band called Crooked Mile and also did a lot of solo work. The band Woodshed Mercy, Drew Clare and Jen O'Neill from Woodshed Mercy, they were down there all the time. Gosh, there's just so many of them. I'm trying to remember. It was huge. We used to do these outdoor roots fests in the street. We would block off 39th Street next door to the Friar
mm-hmm.
and put a flatbed trailer out there and have these big roots music festivals. You know, we didn't know we couldn't do it.
Right.
We just thought it would be a great idea. Kind of like our friend Jay and his Wigwam Fest.
Right. Yeah, I just have a few friends coming over, and some of them are musicians. They might play a little, you know, whenever it happens.
Yep.
As long as the cops don't bust you up, you're good, right?
Actually, one of my favorite Town Friar bands that I got to be a part of was, you know, California Speedbag had their first reunion in many, many years mm-hmm. there, which is the day I joined the band.
And actually, that dovetails nicely, because that's what I was going to ask you about next. Because that's another major part of Cleveland music history that's, in a lot of ways, been forgotten. Because California Speedbag was really one of the original country punk bands out there.
I think they were one of the first ever.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, right along with Jason and Nashville Scorchers, like right in that exact same moment.
And they grew out of what is one of Cleveland's most storied and loved musical traditions. I mean, they grew out of the original Cleepunk scene from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the members of California Speedbag were in Neptune's Car and the Kneecappers and Dr. Blood Money. That's where they came from, and that's how California Speedbag was formed.
Right, so they basically, when they came together, they just injected it with that country edge. And
Gary and Brian both, Gary Lupico and Brian Cox both, had always loved, you know, real country music.
Mm-hmm.
And the more they started listening to it, the more they got into it. And with a mutual love of, you know, George Jones and Johnny Paycheck and all those kind of people.
Johnny Paycheck's from Ohio, by the way. Nobody remembers that.
Yep. But they just, you know, they decided that they were going to play these George Jones and Johnny Paycheck songs, and they were going to play them their way. And then Gary started writing all these really, really brilliant country songs. I mean, and I still think he's one of the best country songwriters in the world. And I'll stand on Steve Earle's coffee table with my cowboy boots and say that.
Yes, I completely think you would.
But, yeah, he started writing his own, you know, all these country songs. And it was, they realized the same thing that a lot of these other country punk and cow punk bands realized, is that the George Jones tunes and the Hank Williams tunes and the Johnny Paycheck tunes really, except for the feel, weren't very much different from what they were doing anyway. Mm-hmm. The content is all the same. You know, the broken hearts, the drinking too much, the staying up too late, the getting in fist fights. It's really country. But real country music is kind of punk music all on its own. It's just got a different delivery system.
Right, right. And I mean, in a lot of ways, it's very similar to the Heartland Rock that, you know, grew up around here, too. That whole working class ethic in a lot of ways. You know, you listen to a Merle Haggard song, what's it about? But some guy who likes, you know, sitting around in his undershirt and drinking beer after work. I mean, same thing if you listen to a Michael Stanley song or something. Basically the same idea. You just combine them in different ways.
I love how you always find a way to work Michael Stanley.
I love it too, right? Dude, it's Cleveland. We got to do something to get the names out there. So, not only, well, you weren't one of the original members of the Speedbag. So I guess,
no, I was not.
Can you tell us how you got involved in that then?
I first heard Speedbag, believe it or not, down in Texas. And,
I don't believe it. I just don't believe it.
I had forgotten about it. When a friend of mine, when I was growing up, had a cassette tape of California Speedbag when I was in high school. And we used to listen to it a lot. But then, you know, I got out of there right after graduation. I was gone. And because I just wanted to see what else the world held besides San Angelo, Texas. It's a wonderful little town. But, man, there's got to be something more. And turns out there was a lot. Not to slight San Angelo, Texas. It's a great town. Right. And I would love to go back there again and see it, but there was a lot more going on than I thought could be going on in the world. And so I promptly forgot about, you know, that tape. And when I moved up here and started playing with Hey Shaker Jones a couple years into being in Cleveland, Clint Holly and I would go back to his house sometimes after gigs and put on the Speedbag cassettes and just listen to Speedbag and drink a bunch of beer until, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning or whatnot. And I fell in love with these songs all over again. And Gary's singing and the band's playing is so sloppy but so beautiful. And Gary's songs are just, you know, they're brilliant. And so here I had this band on this gigantic pedestal, you know. And then a little while later, Hey Shaker went and did some recording at Gary's studio. Because Gary Lipko at that point had opened up a recording studio down on St. Clair, down the road a bit from Mitzi's. And so we would go there and record, and then when we would get done, Gary and Clint and I, and Dave sometimes would roll, and sometimes just me and Gary, would roll down to Mitzi's and proceed to drink, where Gary would ply me for a couple hours about information about Texas, because he wanted to move to Texas, and he wanted to go there so badly. And eventually he did, and that's a whole other story. But, you know, so first of all, I couldn't believe that I was sitting there, you know, and I was friends with this guy, Gary Lupik, who had written all these brilliant songs that I loved from California Speedbag, you know, one of my favorite bands, and now I'm friends with the guy, and I'm recording in the studio, and we're drinking beers together, and he's asking me about Texas. It was all a little over my head at the time. And then I want to say it was 2007, maybe 08. I think it was, no, because the Belmont Sessions came out in 08. I want to say,
which was your previous record, just for the people who don't know.
Well, Live from Cleveland came out in 2006, which was the record before that. So I want to say it was 07. It might have been 06, but I want to say it was 07. We had one of those Town Friar days. It was early on in the legacy of the Friar. And California Speedbag was supposed to play. They were supposed to do a reunion there. And I was stoked. I really wanted to see those guys. I'd never met anyone else in the band besides Gary. I didn't know if they were still around. You know, it was just one of those things. And the guy showed up, and Brian Cox came up to me and said, "Do you want to play with us? We're short a guitar player." And we, of course, referring to, by that time, in 06, Gary had passed, so it must have been 07. And I said, well, I don't, you know, I love your music. I said, I don't really know any of the songs. And he said, that's okay, neither do we.
And to this day, they haven't learned it, right?
And so I got up and I played with California Speedbag on all these classic, you know, Gary Lee Picot songs and these killer classic country covers that, of course, we revved up way too loud and too fast. Mm-hmm. And it was so much fun. It was just incredible. And I put that one down as, hey, you know, knock that off the bucket list. Mm-hmm. And Christmas rolled around and I got a call from Russell Sherman, the bass player, that they were going to play Old Home Night at the Beachland and would I like to come play with them again. And I thought, man, that's just incredible. So I went and did it again. And then the next year in May was another show at the Beachland. They called me back again. And ever, you know, the band only plays once or twice a year, but ever since then, it's been once or twice a year. And it took a few years because every time I would go to the gig, I would say, hey, if you guys, you know, want me to lay out or, you know, you get tired of what I'm doing, just let me know. You know, I just appreciate being along for the ride. And it eventually became apparent to me that I had become a member of the band. And that's still a little overwhelming at times. But yeah, that's how I became a member of California Speedbag. You know, the band I listened to on a bootleg cassette when I was in high school.
Indeed. For people who have never seen Speedbag live, it's just one hell of an experience. I mean, it's just sloppy, crazy, hard-hitting, country punk in your face, like lots of songs about drinking and craziness, and you going wild on the guitar.
It's songs about, you know, heartbreak, loss, regret, unrequited love, drinking too much, getting in fights. It's, you know, it's what country music's all about. And yeah, it's too loud and it's a little sloppy, but it's not about precision.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, what makes it fun. I mean, no, you realize you're not in,
it's
not like,
about precision. It's right. about kicking you in the ass.
There you go.
And making you drink with us, you know, because we love to drink.
And that definitely happens quite a bit at a Speed
Big
show.
Does.
Indeed. But I find it interesting, because actually, I think I may have seen you once or twice and not actually remembered it, but I think the first time that I actually did see you play was in Speedbag, and didn't even realize it, and then I saw you again when Speedbag, that was when they opened for Wayne the Train, I believe, the Beachlands.
Wayne the Train. Did we do a Wayne the Train show with Speedbag?
Pretty sure.
We may have, I don't remember.
I think it was after he got sober, so he was no fun at all.
I don't remember.
Yeah, anyway.
I remember playing with Wayne at the Town Friar, and he was not sober, and neither were we.
Yeah, well, that sounds all right. Well, definitely then, I remember seeing you open for Billy Joe Shaver well after that. And
we've done that several times.
That up. Yeah, yep. Yeah, it's always
Billy's
fun.
A wonderful, wonderful guy that I always enjoy doing shows with.
Indeed. In fact, while we're on that subject, that wasn't where I was going, but that night, I know I did an interview with him, which is still one of my favorites ever. I mean, he was just totally on that night. It was great. But he actually grabbed you and took you into the little cubbyhole next to the stage, and you guys talked for a while, right?
The little wannabe, like, the little, and it actually is green, the little stage,
right, yeah.
Green room on the side of this, on the side of the ballroom stage. Yeah, I don't know. I said hello to Billy, because I always do, and the last couple of shows, he actually remembered me, because we've done so many together now, whether I was playing in Hey Shaker opening for him, or you know, with California Speedbag. I think I did one with another band too, maybe by myself, I don't remember.
Okay.
But there's probably been a half a dozen Billy Joe Shaver shows over the years. And, you know, that last time, yeah, I just said, hey, Billy, how's it going? It's great to have you back again. You know, it's always good to see you. And he goes, hey, let's go in here. Okay. And, you know,
well, Billy Joe Shaver tells you to go in a little room and hang out with him. You kind of say yes, right?
If Billy Joe told me, let's go down in the basement, turn off all the lights, I'd go just to see what would happen, you know, because it would probably be something crazy. But, yeah, he said, hey, let's go in here. And I think, you know, he wanted to talk, but there was, at that point, it was starting to fill up in the ballroom. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of people standing around trying to talk to him. And he might have, I don't know if he got a little overwhelmed or what, but he just gave me that, you know, that Billy Joe smile.
Yeah.
That just makes the sun come out and all the snow melt. You know, and he said, hey, let's go in here. And I said, all right. We went in there and he shut the door. And we just sat down and talked for, I'd say, nearly an hour about everything. You know, about music and about life and about my kids and about his kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Eddie a lot, of course, was a big subject of discussion there. Mm-hmm. And it was just a really good night. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Well, I think you can thank me for that, because he was coming straight out of the interview with me So maybe I flustered him a bit, or he just decided he wanted to keep talking. Who knows?
Maybe, but you cracked the shell open.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was in a talkative mood that night. It was great. It was it's seriously one of my favorite interviews ever. But where I was originally going with that is the speed bag is pretty much 180 degrees away from the other side of your music, which is the acoustic guitar, not the Waylon electric guitar and the singer-songwriter type of thing. And that's basically what you do on the new album, right? It's just you did have a full band backing you on the album.
I did have a full band, and I played all the electric guitars as well as the acoustic ones, mm-hmm. and all the bass, and some percussion too, and a little bit of harmonica. But I also had Chris Hanna doing keys, Hammond organ, piano, and Wurlitzer. Dan Morris from California Speedbag mm-hmm. played all the pedal steel. John Darling, who's a Cleveland staple, you know, did all the drums. He plays drums for the Pink Floyd tribute, Wish You Were Here, and plays for King Bees and a lot of other local bands. But he also was working in my cover band, Famous in Cleveland, and so that's why I asked him to do the album, and it turned out really nicely.
Very cool. Well, I think it turned out very nicely all around, as you can probably tell from my review when I did it. But this is actually the third time you've done an interview for Burning River Fireside Chats, and the first time it's actually been about you. So let's take a few minutes before we go on stage and they can talk about the album and some of the songs on it.
Sure.
Like we said, the name of the album is 16 Winters, but the first song is entitled 15 Winters, which I guess means it was written about a year before the album came out, right?
That's exactly true. It was written last June, actually. And, well, not this past one, but the one before, obviously, 2013. Mm-hmm. I was in Minneapolis to record the new Mary Cucciafello record that just came out, Faithless World.
Uh-huh.
And she had flown me up
which
there.
Which she still hasn't sent me a final copy of.
She will.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I don't have one either, and yeah. I played all the bass on it. So, no, she had flown me up there to play bass on the record. I also did a little bit of guitar and some backing vocals. But one of the first nights I was there, she said, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "Well, what's there to do?" She said, "Well, some friends of mine who are really cool guys have an open mic night up the street. We should go there." And I said, "Okay, let's go there." And, you know, cheap beers, good songwriters. It was good, nice musicians. It was a lot of fun. But one of the hosts was sitting off to the side of the stage and was playing this groove on his acoustic guitar. And it's not exactly what 15 Winters is now.
Okay.
But it was in that ballpark for sure. That's definitely where the idea came from for that, you know, that lead-in riff from the E minor up to the G. And while he was sitting there playing that, I thought, man, that's the coolest sounding riff. And in about 10 minutes, I had the entire song written in my head. Like the whole thing. It was obvious. It was tweaked a little bit after the fact, but I had 98% of it was done mm-hmm. in my head. And I couldn't wait to get back to Mary's that night because I didn't want to forget it. Mm-hmm. I just kept singing it to myself in my head. And as soon as we got back to her house, I sat down at the table with a pen and paper and wrote the whole thing out. So that, because I knew if I waited till morning, it was going to be gone
right.
forever.
A few more beers and that was in the trash.
Yeah, it wasn't going to happen. So yeah, that song was written in an open mic in Minneapolis.
But it is very autobiographical and really covers the transition of you as a Texan coming to Cleveland and adapting to all that, right?
Yeah, it does. It does. It's it starts when I'm a teenager and just, you know, needing to find something else, and then I do, and now here I am. That's, which is a really crappy way to shortcut, you know, 24 years or whatever, but, you know, sometimes that's the way it's got to be.
Right. But, I mean, you know, the song speaks for itself in that sense, so if people just listen to it, they'll get the rest of the story.
Yep.
And
yep,
we got into definitely. A few more of the details in there earlier here. But yeah, I think it's a great way to lead off the album, because I do see this a little bit as sort of really a redemptive album, you know, a lot about you finding your way, and that song really highlights it, you know, how you've changed over time in your life and you've become content with who you are. And,
yeah.
That's what I saw out of it.
Warts and all.
Indeed. Another one that I thought was very much along that line, although maybe even a little bit more Heartland Rocky, was Still In It, which I think is the most GS of any GS Harper song.
Still In It is my favorite song on the entire record.
Yeah?
Yeah. That's, you're not supposed to pick favorites when they're your kids, but, you know, everybody's lying if they say they don't have one.
Okay.
That
I hope Maureen doesn't hear this.
No, Still In It is definitely, yeah, is definitely my favorite of all the songs on the record. And it's actually the newest song, or one of the newest songs. It was written in 2013 as well. And I ended up giving that, that song is what I call my, my 40th birthday present to myself. You know, I was sitting around and that just kind of came out of the birthday that almost never was. You know, it just like, it didn't, not that I almost didn't have a birthday or died or something. It just, you know, it just kind of, I thought it was going to be a really big deal, and it really wasn't. It just kind of came and went. And it, at first that upset me, and later I realized that it really didn't matter. That I had a great time anyway.
Indeed.
And it got me to thinking about a lot of other things, which led to me writing that song. And it's that song is, I believe every word of it 100%. I'm kind of a full of shit individual. I make up a lot of stuff, and I never let the truth get in the way of a good story, ever. But that song is about the most no bullshit thing I've ever written in a long line of no bullshit songs.
Very cool. Yeah, I, honestly, I mean, I know a lot of musicians, obviously, and it's always interesting to see the difference between like the onstage persona and the real persona, and the spin that they put on it, and like when they're actually, you know, putting stuff in their songs and all that. I think you're one of those Jekyll and Hyde people where in your songs you're just 100% like, this is the way it fucking is, and like you don't lie because that's your art. But then when you get a couple beers in you and you're at the bar telling stories, anything is possible. It might be real, it might not, but it's GS all the way.
Well,
right?
You know, the funny part of it is that the ones that you're probably least likely to believe are the ones that are the most true.
Yeah.
That's, if they ever make a movie about my life, nobody's going to believe it. Just because when you spend 20-some-odd years doing whatever the hell you feel like and going wherever you please, and, you know, you meet some really interesting people and you find yourself in some really interesting situations that people who live life by the book, you know, meaning what you're supposed to do,
right,
quote unquote,
right,
they don't ever find themselves in those kind of situations. Mm-hmm. So when they hear those stories, they go, no way.
Right.
People don't do that. That doesn't happen. Well, in their world, it doesn't.
So right.
I understand the incredulity. You know,
right.
I do. That's
at the town crier at 4 in the morning, everything will have happened.
That's no, I understand that, that people can't believe some of the stories I tell. They think, well, that guy's a great storyteller, but, you know, man, is he full of shit. That's I can understand where they get that. And, you know, every once in a while I am, but usually I'll let you know when I'm just making something up.
Well, fair enough. I think, I mean, I have a very similar outlook. I mean, that's why I call myself a vagabond philosopher, you know, like this is pretty much the longest I've ever stayed anywhere since I was 18, is this last stretch here in Cleveland. And I mean, I think it has a lot to do with getting so involved in the music scene and that being sort of a different outlet than traveling, you know, for me at least. But yeah, I don't understand people who want responsibility and all that shit. Like, if I want to go home and get my passport and go to Guatemala, I could do that. I could go out on the road with you for 2 months or whatever we want to.
Well, as long as I'd be willing to put up with it.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. Well, you just make sure you don't drop me off in San Antonio or something crazy, or Colorado. Well, if you want to drop me off in Colorado, actually, I'd love that.
When is this coming out?
Whenever. Shortly. A couple weeks. Or later than that. I don't know.
Is it going to be after November 1st?
If you want it to be.
Well, if it's after November 1st, then I can go ahead and tell you that I'm leaving Cleveland here. So, you just brought up Colorado. Maureen just got a new job, so we'll soon be Denver residents.
Are you now?
Yeah.
Well, shit. Interesting. Well, I'll definitely have to come and visit you then, because like I say.
Yeah.
Well, so that when is that the move actually going down?
End of October.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
End of October.
Well, shit.
We just found out last week.
Okay.
It's not like this was premeditated and long.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, shit,
but, as you said, you know, this is the longest you've ever lived anywhere since you were. I've been here for 16 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I was born in West Texas and I grew up there. But, I mean, when I was a little kid, we moved around all the time. We were in Europe, we were in New York, we were in South Carolina. My dad was military. And it's to be in one. I've lived in Cleveland longer than I've ever lived anywhere at one stretch.
Right.
You know, I mean, 16 years in one spot, that's absolutely insane. And I've gotten really happy and really, I love Cleveland.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Cleveland is my home more than, I think, almost more than Texas ever was. Because I've been here for so long. Texas will always be my home, but Cleveland is, you know, I don't know. I've grown very, very attached to it, and I've gotten used to it. And when I get used to things, it's hard for me to throw them away.
I know that feeling.
I have jeans that no human being should wear, you know, that's, but I love them. They're mine.
Right.
And that's the way I feel about Cleveland. You know, it's like an old pair of jeans, an old pair of boots that just, that fits you so well that you know you should get rid of it, but you can't bring yourself to do it because there's nothing better for you than that.
Gotcha.
And so the whole Colorado aspect of this is kind of frightening to me.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
On the bright side, now that I'm touring full time and there's no end in sight to that, I'll get to come back to Cleveland all the time.
There you go.
And I can ease into.
Well, that pretty much makes you an official member of Speedbag if you're not living here anymore. That kind of actually kind of helps. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess if there was a time to do that in your career, I mean, obviously you're doing it because of your wife's job in particular, but in your career, I mean, you've been a stay-at-home daddy for years, basically, and that's kind of kept you here, but now that you can move around.
Well, you know, of all the places that a job could have come to her, the places we could have had to move, I can't think of many better things for me and for her and the kids and everything. I couldn't think of many better, any place I'd rather go than, you know, Denver.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, it could have been Chicago or New York or Atlanta or God forbid. Who wants to go to Miami? You know, it's like, I'm not a big city kind of guy. You know, and Denver's a big town that's also really, really cool and close to a ton of awesome stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, and it's got its own roots and country thing. And it's, the mountains are there, which I love. And it's, I'm kind of looking forward to a new adventure because it's there.
Gotcha.
You know, if it was anywhere else, I don't know if I'd even tell you I was going. I might just seem like I wasn't around much.
Yeah. Well, you have been for the last month or so, so maybe people wouldn't even notice.
Yeah.
Well, no, dude, that's exciting in some ways, and congratulations, and good luck on that. And also, it's definitely a little bit sad because
More than a little bit sad.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad and it's scary.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. It's frightening.
You know? Yeah.
I've gotten... I don't want this. I don't know. It's hard to say this and not sound egotistical, but that's certainly not how I mean it. I've gotten used to, in the Cleveland thing here, in the root scene, I've gotten used to being a relatively big fish in a relatively small pond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm very, very lucky. I'm very fortunate. I don't have to look for gigs. I don't have to hunt down musicians to play with. I don't have to, you know, do any of that stuff. I basically just, you know, shoot somebody a text message or a phone call. And I say, hey, it's Harper, you want to do something? And it happens.
Right, right.
You know, and it really is that easy. And I know how fortunate I am because I know a lot of people don't have it that way. But it's pretty soon I'm not going to either, you know. I call up somebody in Denver and say, hey, it's G.S. Harper, how about they're going to go?
Ooh. Right, exactly, yeah. Right.
So?
Well,
it's starting from scratch.
Right. Well, it's little gigs for a while, I guess, but, yeah. I mean, you're used to that in the road by now, so...
Yeah.
You know, it won't be much different when you're playing at home, I guess, for a while at least.
Yep, pretty much.
So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because we're losing another good friend of mine, Diana Chittister.
Diana's headed to Portland.
Indeed.
Wonderful friend of mine, too. I love her.
Yes, yes, indeed. And, of course, her manager/girlfriend, Jessica. Just amazing
Jessica.
People.
Yep.
And I actually... ended up sleeping on their couch last night, which is why I was late getting up here because I had to go all the way back home and it was in a mess. But yeah, man, like it that seems like two big blows to the Cleveland music scene right in a row.
Well, you know what? It's I wouldn't say it that way because there's a lot of artists coming up right now
mm-hmm.
that I think I'm not going to go into naming names and calling people out, but I think there's a lot of things happening in the Cleveland music scene right now that are not only going to easily replace, you know, having Diana and I out of town, they're going to eventually eclipse us. And at least that's my hope for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and my hope for the scene in general. It's so much more going on in town right now than any one musician or group of musicians could hope to put a dent in by moving away. It used to be if you were from Cleveland and you wanted to have a real career in music, you had to move away.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's the case anymore at all. I think it's only a matter, it's a matter of a very few short years before people are actually moving to Cleveland to have a music career. And I really believe that.
I kind of feel that that's the way we could be going. I mean, I lived in Brooklyn for a while, and honestly, like, there's some of that same feeling of, like, things on the move that I had when I was living there, and now look what happened to Brooklyn 10 years later.
There's definitely, you know, strange things are afoot at the Circle K. Mm-hmm. There's a lot building around here right now. And it may look bad that, you know, Diane and I are both jumping ship at the same time and leaving town, but yeah, I can't speak for her, obviously, but I'd love to think it's you know, it's like me. I mean, I'm not leaving Cleveland because I don't like it here.
Yeah.
Or I don't like the people, or I don't think I can be successful here, because I really think that it's getting to the point where, yeah, you can do it here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, like I said, I don't think it's going to be too much longer.
You've proved you can do it here for quite a long time. I mean, you're one of the old survivors for sure on the scene now.
16 years, I've never had to worry about finding work here. When I very first moved here, the first week I was here, I met Michael Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And for the people who
just
don't
saw him
know,
last night, actually,
legendary, you know, for 40 years now, I think, on the Cleveland scene,
mm-hmm.
you know, playing guitar and teaching at the Guitar Conservatory that he owns and operates.
Mm-hmm.
And the first week I was here, I met Michael, and I asked him, I said, is there a lot of work here? You know, can a guy get gigs? Are there a lot of bands? And he looked me in the eye and he said, if you're not working 3 nights a week within the first month or so, it's your fault. He said, the work's here. If you're not getting it, it's not the city's fault. It's yours, and you need to think about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't being jerky about it at all. He was being a mentor.
Right.
He was saying, if you do this right, then yes, the work is here. And you know what? He was right. I've never not been able to find musical work in Cleveland. It hasn't always been ideal or what I wanted, but I've never had to struggle.
Gotcha.
It's just getting better all the time.
All right, well, we are going to have to head down to...
we got
to
go watch my friend Christine Jackson play.
But I really want to thank you. That was really great. I think that's a good note to end it on because, you know, even if you are taking off for Colorado and all that, I think the scene is really better than it's ever been, and it's going to keep getting better. So I hope you come back to Cleveland all the time.
Oh, I will. There's no way Cleveland's not going to be a tour stop forever.
You know, absolutely.
I got family here. I got friends here. You know, my kids were born here. We're always going to be back here, no matter
right.
where we live.
Right. And I mean, you know, it's been a great transformation, just as you described it. And like you said, I think there's only good things ahead. So, as long as you are playing music, Cleveland will be another home for you, I'm sure. So,
definitely.
Awesome. And I guess just for people who know, you are going to be touring around pretty much nonstop. As long as this record can fuel you until you feel like you got to record another one, right?
Yeah, I'm going to be writing here. I've done a little bit of idea jotting, and I'll be writing some complete songs, finishing some things up here in the next week or so. I'm hoping, if I can pull enough cash together off this touring endeavor to put another record out about the same time that 16 Winners came out this year.
Okay.
So hopefully,
well, let's make it on my birthday, and yeah. I'll.
Hopefully about a year from that, we'll get 17 Springs. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Whatever works. Well, just so people know, if they want to catch you in their city, what's your email or your web address? I'm sorry.
GSHarper.com. It has all the tour dates and all the updates on there all the time. You can follow me on Twitter at GSHarper1. Does that too. And Facebook there's a page called GS Harper Music that you can follow for all the updates.
Absolutely. Check all those out, and of course, follow us here at No Surf Music, because we'll keep following GS as well. Thank you very much, sir. It was a pleasure talking to you. This is the first time that we've really gotten to talk about your music, so it was great, man.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate it, man.
This has been a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond, signing off. Remember, No Surf Music is your source for the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more. For original reviews and interviews, visit nosurfmusic.com.